Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to episode 108 of Double Hop Beat, where we take the pulse of the beer and brewing scene. I'm James, a home brewer and craft beer enthusiast.
And I'm Shannon, a beer intermediate. We are going to head back in time.
Get in that toll booth and just go back in time and dig up the archives and
go back all the way to episode one. Because, James, coincidentally, we are coming up on our 5-year anniversary of this show.
5 years, everyone.
May
5 years. Congratulations.
Woohoo, 5 years. Yes, so we released our first episode on March 16th, 2019.
Yeah.
Right? In time for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I find it interesting that we started on that date, and it was probably a stupid idea that I had, where I was like, oh, like if we kickstart the podcast right before St. Patrick's Day, we're going to get more listeners because, you know what, people will find an episode about how to pick your pint right in time for St. Patrick's Day. And yeah. Shannon's giving a look of, well, James, that's not exactly how social media works.
It's, you gotta, you know, sometimes you have to walk and then jog before you can run. Sometimes it's a slow build, James, slow burn.
If we go back 5 years, we were recording in our first house together. Mm-hmm. The house was built in like the 1800s.
Yep.
So it was a very old historic house. It was actually an old mill house. Mm-hmm. And we were recording on, Shannon, your MacBook from college.
Yeah.
A couple,
which I still use to edit, but we were using that strictly to record.
Yeah.
And there was very limited drive space on it. So
we were also trying to be ahead of our time where we were trying to have video of us like while we were talking. And it just made the audio just so bad quality where today it's like, I don't know. It might be a different change. I don't know.
I think it's more of an internet issue than video quality, but like that's the root cause is internet. But
root cause. Internet.
Root cause.
You know
is
who
internet.
You are, internet.
Yeah, we were recording in my old office and literally we would have to move all the furniture whenever we wanted to record so we could sit across from each other. And it was hot, it was cold, there was a lot of fluctuation in that room. It was just, so we have since obviously moved homes, we've had a pandemic in between, we now record in a guest room that we have at our new house, which has carpet in it, so it absorbs some of the sound. We were in the very echoey room before, so we've upgraded, I'd say, in the last 5 years, for sure.
Yeah, and we've also tried recording down in the brewery, too. I think that was our goal with our new house, but again, we haven't quite gotten that space to where we'd want it, so the sound quality would be as good mm-hmm. as this particular room we have in our house, that it just naturally has a better sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some things I wanted to highlight, just going back 5 years ago to see how much time has changed. It doesn't feel like it's been 5 years, but it has. And 5 years ago, James, you just had the kegerator in our dining room. That was it. That was the only thing we had for beer on tap. And now you have 4 tap lines?
Well,
or 4,
it all depends on what you actually consider tap line.
I mean, built in
just
like
kegerators, then yes, there's 2 kegerators. One's a triple tap faucet, and then the other one's the single, which I still have, still use.
So, same one, yeah.
So I just slowly had to work you over time of just, you know, the first kegerator, it was in our dining room. And then after that, one more piece of equipment, then one more, then one more. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen out there that are home brewers, don't worry. It'll come with time. You can finagle your way to get 2 kegerators in the same house.
Yeah, it may take you 5 years, but
and the way I describe it as having more than just those 4 taps because mm-hmm. I have 2 bright tanks, which can also you can serve out of those.
Yes.
You also have the party faucets that we have in the different kegs that you just mm-hmm. hook up the faucets to. So in actuality, we've had at one point 8 beers on tap in our house at once. All home brews. But again, I used to have that single kegerator. It was just because I was sick of paying the $10 for a 6-pack of my favorite craft beer. So I was like, hey, it's actually cheaper if I get a pony keg, a 6-barrel keg from the liquor store and have it on tap on the 1 kegerator. And now look how far we've come.
Yeah.
Where if I could pay $10 for a 4-pack,
yeah, that's true.
You would be, I'd be like jumping
like
up and
selling
down.
All your stuff.
Everything was also bottles at that point. There wasn't a lot of cans. Like mm-hmm. the cans that were on there, it was just kind of, You're like, all right, why would I get cans when I can get bottles? And now it's just totally reversed.
Yeah, exactly. You had also just gotten your SS BrewTech 7-gallon uni tank.
So it was my first step up into being able to pressurize my fermentation if I wanted to, and also having basically all the capabilities that a craft brewery would have on the fermenting side, meaning I could adjust my temp control for fermentation to get dial in. If it was a cold, if it was a lager, I could go down to lagering temps. I wasn't restricted by our space. So my first start off in the brewing, I had the brew SS brew bucket after I upgraded from my plastic buckets, and that I still hadn't had temp control for until I had upgraded that and then upgraded that. And again, I started off with a cooler. Remember that, Chen?
Yep.
We, in our mudroom, I had the nice little cooler that you see on the beach, and I just basically drilled two holes in it. I would freeze 2-liter bottles of soda that were left over. Mm-hmm. I'd freeze the bottles, fill them with water, and just use that kind of like an ice bath and just pump cold water through the tubing using that. So again, I was very DIY homebrewing back in those days.
Yeah. I mean, you still do some DIY here and there, but you were definitely more grassroots, I would say, in 2019. Also, you had just done a Pink Boots brew for International Women's Month. And I introduced myself as a beer novice and that I liked the taste of beer.
So for those asking, where did she get the beer intermediate title and how did that all start? Again, she started by calling herself a beer novice and that she liked the taste of beer.
Yeah, so that was my intro. And now I've advanced to, I guess I feel like I should get something between intermediate and expert. I don't know if there's like a in-between level that I could give myself. Because after 5 years, I feel like I could upgrade from intermediate.
I mean, again, maybe. It depends on the frequency of how often you brew too. So it's like familiarity. It's how comfortable you are brewing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think intermediate is the right.
Okay,
the
so
right
you think I should stick with
you.
Okay, sounds good. And also, just to give you some idea of the industry and how it's grown in the past 5 years, in 2019, there were 8,275 craft breweries in the United States. And as of 2023, so technically 4 years,
yes,
there are now 9,553 breweries in the United States. So that's about an increase of 1,300 breweries or 260 craft breweries in the United States per year.
Yeah. And I'm wondering what's considered the craft brewery in that and how long they'd have to stay open or if it's like, you know, like what the numbers are saying there, but definitely a huge boom. I mean, I remember having to drive a significant way to just find a craft brewery and not having as many options that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And also how connected they are with the public as well. I feel like the social media game has totally changed to being absolutely essential for breweries to be able to be in business. I mean, just the simple things of making sure your hours of operation are correct online, making sure you're telling your consumers what your space has to offer. Is it dog friendly? Is it kid friendly? What kind of vibe do you think are you kind of putting out there for your guests to kind of experience? And I know Treehouse has been such a big boom recently in the last couple of years. And what I love about them is they were talking about they don't want to be known as like a brewery. They want to be known as like an experience. But it's not just going to a brewery to have beer. It's also you want to have things for people that don't drink beer. So again, expanding into seltzers and having wine available or other options for people and even non-alcoholic options for people to kind of just cater to a more broader audience than just two IPAs on tap and the standard, lager on tap. So I think a lot has changed in that aspect as well.
Yeah, I definitely have seen the increase of styles, the more experimentation, just the growth in general has been really interesting to watch over the past 5 years.
And I think the community outreach too. I've never seen more craft breweries actively trying to be a part in a benefit to their community than I have today of just different initiatives that they're self doing, whether they have like our Brew Another Day initiative, like things like that, where they're just trying to support their local businesses, whether it's, partnering with the local restaurants or catering companies or good causes.
Giving
back to the community. I've never seen so much giving back by breweries overall than I have in the last year.
Well, your community is what supports you in order to succeed. If they're giving you their support, you should give your support back to them.
And I think a lot of that is, you know, in tribute to COVID and just being isolated for so long of what really is important to people and what values come out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, as tough as it was and as bad as it was, you know, the society as a whole, I think, has come out better, you know, a challenge, rose to the challenge. Yeah.
Well, that's just a little look back into the last 5 years.
We had like five listeners back then, four of which were your family. Probably. One was my mom. And then it's grown since then.
Yeah, for sure. Since we're going back to our 5 year anniversary, or this is our 5 year anniversary, I thought we'd also go back to our very first episode and kind of maybe redo or add some more insight now that we've grown and developed into mature individuals.
Well, we don't have a legit like novel script of what we're going to say. Mm-hmm. So we're reading a book, but
okay.
I think the script being not non-scripted, I think, has really helped create what we've created on this show and bringing guests in as well. That kind of why we started this podcast.
Yeah. The script is not scripted. The script is unscripted. Okay, so our very first episode was about how to pick a pint. So basically when you go out to a brewery or a liquor store, a packy, whatever, how do you decide what to drink? And so there's a couple of things that I was reading over our extensive document from our last time we did this.
It was like six pages
and
long.
I figured I would pull out some of the things that I feel like we would still have on our list when it's not a very complicated thing. You know, picking a pint is not rocket science, but there is an art, I feel like, a little bit to pick a pint. So you want to keep coming back and trying different beers and not being scared away by picking something that you don't enjoy. So I figured we would just highlight some of the things we mentioned last time and then maybe add a couple of additional items that we didn't touch on. So the first thing we recommended was asking your bartender which beer they recommend.
Now, that is still true. Yes. However, since these 5 years, so I was one of those bartenders behind the bar. So this is kind of the inspiration behind why I want our first episode to be kind of help people choose an avenue or the right questions to ask. If you've never had beer before and you want to try it, if you're with a friend who brings you to a craft brewery or someone that really knows what they want and they're looking at the menu and there's too big of a menu. Mm-hmm. So they know they only have one or two pints to pick from for their time there. So how do you make those decisions? So I think this is still true. I think you still want to go ask your brewtender, what are they most excited about? And I said that before and Chin kind of laughed at me, I think, the first time I said it. And now she does it more than I do when I go to a brewery, where you'll go and you'll say, well, I kind of like this. What are you excited about? And if they don't agree, if they're not excited about that, but they say, all right, I'm more of a lager, I drink lager, so I can't speak to that, but people say it's really good.
Yeah. So our second thing that we recommended last time is telling the brewtender, when you're asking that question, telling them what styles you like. So if they don't have something exactly like that, they can recommend something that's similar. But I also wanted to add is not just in beer, what flavors do you like? What do you like to eat? Do you like sweet? Do you like savory? Like, do you not like things that are really bitter? Do you love bitter? Like, using that palate from your everyday life to then translate into beer, because it's all very similar. I mean, there's only so many, you know, tastes out there. Like, there is a finite amount of taste out there. So
yeah, and alongside that, I still think what's relevant and what's true is if you do say like Sam Adams Boston Lager, and that's the one kind of drink that you like for beer, you can go to a brewery and say, I like Sam Adams Boston Lager. Do you have something similar? Those are the kind of things I like to drink.
Yeah, because the flavor profile from a Boston Lager is going to be similar in a different type of beer. It won't be exactly the same as a Boston Lager, but they can still pick out a beer for you that has that maltiness and the same, you know, touchstones that a Boston Lager has.
And now I say this with a disclaimer. So on this, our tip of asking a brewtender which beer they would recommend, it only goes so far as the knowledge that person behind the bar has been given, how much training they've had. So this is my biggest tip on this caveat that I said 5 years ago. While you're waiting in line, see how the people behind the bar are answering other people's questions in line in front of you. See how their interactions are. Because you can usually tell by waiting in line if that person's going to be able to answer your question honestly, or if they're going to just say, I don't know. Or a recent example, Shannon wanted to try a Goes from a certain brewery. And so they said, sorry, we're all out. I go, oh, well, could you recommend something similar to that? Do you have anything similar to that? So he's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And he pours, brings over, and he goes, oh, this is our lager. This is our, like, house lager that we have. So I was like, okay. Like, very, very different.
Very different.
So Shannon was expecting something sour, something, you know, a little bit more fruity. And this is a lager, is a polar opposite. So he's kind of using the technique of let's go something polar opposite, or he didn't exactly know what a Goes was, that even though they had it on tap before. So again, I don't like to put the brew tenders at fault. Again, it's training. They're behind the bar because that brewery is trusting them to represent the brand, their brand. At least this is how I picture what a brew tender is behind a bar. And again, if they didn't have a Goes, I could understand that, you know, the brew tender wouldn't know what a Goes necessarily is. I didn't know what a Goes was 5 years ago. But same thing, if someone wants a sour and you recommend, you know, a Bud Light, they're going to be
not the same.
Totally turned off by that, especially if they're expecting to have a sour. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, this is what this brewery considers to be a sour? Like, yikes, I don't know if there's going to be something else I like on the menu based on that recommendation. Mm-hmm. So again, my biggest recommendation on asking the bartender is while you're in line, while you're waiting, be a little creep.
Do a little reconnaissance.
and again, like if they're not comfortable making those decisions, then you know what? You just pick from the list, go for it, or try a flight. So again, I think one of the things we said in our first episode was you don't have to commit to a full pint. And nowadays that means so many different things. Before it was just you get a standard pint glass, they fill it with 12 ounces of beer, and that, you know, it's that or a 5 ounce pour. Now they do it where they have so many different beer styles and so many different glassware where you could get a 12 ounce or a 16 ounce. It's all relative based on the alcohol content of the beer. And there's just so many factors now that, you know, that's changed. That's pretty remarkable too, that, I mean, I think there's that much demand for different beers and different beer styles today than there was 5 years ago, that, you know, you're going to not have that simple choice of here's your pint glass, here's your full pour, here's your 5 ounce taster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of going into that same vein, one of our other tips was to get a flight if the brewery offers it, or you were mentioning the tasters. If they don't offer a flight, just ask like, hey, can I have a little taste of that before you do the full pour? And a lot of places will do, even though they don't advertise it, and if they don't sell smaller pours on their menu, they will usually have like a little, almost like a salad dressing cup, like off to the side.
That yeah, they'll or, give you or a mouthful. It would just be the little 5 ounce, like,
yeah, sometimes they don't have those though. Yeah,
filled obviously to 5 ounces, because again, from a business standpoint, that adds up over time in that amount, and it also bottlenecks the line too. If you have a single POS system where you're trying to put in onto the tablet, you know, ringing people in and out, and you only have one line, that'll bottleneck the line. But I think the really great craft breweries allow their staff to do that to a certain degree. It's a respectful degree where the bartender's not taking an advantage of the brewery by pouring literally full 5 ounce pours for someone who wants to try something. And they say, oh no, I'm good with that. And then they don't order something else. Or they say, oh, can I try this too? And then before you know it, you're at a flight anyway, where the business doesn't allow a flight. You're more likely to keep a customer by giving them that taste to see if they like versus, well, all right, I guess I'll try that. And they have it and they complain about it. They don't like it. And then they either bring it back, which I saw in my tenure, they bring it back and it's like, well, what do you want me to do with it? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and again, it's a warning sign too, if breweries don't offer something like that or a half pour. So that's kind of the segue from a flight. Is a lot of places now are just doing half pour. So you can do a half pour or a full pour. So if they don't offer a flight, so a lot of places they'll say, sorry, we don't offer a flight, but we do half pours.
Yeah.
I would say you could get 3 half pours if you want. And like Shannon and I do these days, like we'll be like, all right, like what three do you want to try? And we'll get half pours and then we'll both mm-hmm. try the same ones and see which ones we want to keep and which ones we might pass on.
Yeah. But I would definitely say don't be afraid to ask for that taste, even if it's not obvious that they offer tasters or they have, you know, if you're not sure and they're recommending something, just ask, hey, do you mind if I just have a little taste before I actually get it? Like the worst they're going to say is no. That's what I say about life.
Yeah.
They're just going to say no. If it's not possible, then it's not possible.
Like, can't keep count of how many times I've done that where I'm between two things that they recommend. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really good. Like, I really like what you described on that malt or that hop, the experimental hop sounds really good. But I don't know if I want like a super piney IPA right now. Do you mind if I try it? And then usually I'll just try one of the two options. And then if I don't like it, I'll just get a full pour or a half mm-hmm. pour of whatever else they recommended. That's usually my go-to.
Yeah. So the last thing that we said to keep this in mind when you're at a brewery and
don't be
out
a dick. was that on our list?
I think you did have to. Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy and don't be that girl.
Yeah. And this is definitely still true, is don't put all of your opinions and hopes into reviews that you read online about beers. And we won't harp on this too much because we have definitely talked about it in the past, but looking at Untappd or other places where people can rate beers, don't look at what their opinion is. Maybe unless it's like, oh, this says it's a goes, but like it's not, it's more of a sour. Like that might be helpful. But if it's just based off of, I didn't like this from that person, then, you know, you should probably read the description of the beer as opposed to what they say. So,
and I think especially for those trying to get into beer and craft beer who might not know what they like, I think going in blind is a way better way of going about it. So you don't start mm-hmm. creating your own bias before you've actually tried it. And I think going back 5 years ago, I was that person that was checking.
Don't be that guy, James.
Untappd. I was checking Untappd, seeing what was the highest rated at the place, reading all what people had to say about it, and then I would go after that beer. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many great beers I missed out on because I was going off of someone else's flavor profile, someone else's tastes.
And I notice it more today, not on Untappd, but just in our lives, is, you know, we'll go to a brewery with a lot of our friends, and you'll try a beer, and someone else had that same exact beer, and you'll be like, oh, hey, what do you think? And they'll be like, eh, it's okay. And you're like, I really think this is amazing. So it's just, you know, within your group of friends, and everyone's got different palates. So it's not, you know, it's not surprising that that happens a lot. So I've just noticed it a lot recently.
I think sometimes too, I pick based on if the name's really cool. I mean, like, especially before I knew what hops I liked and stuff like that. If there was like three IPAs on the menu mm-hmm. and they were all New England IPAs, well, at that point, I don't think they had a lot of New England IPAs. It was mostly a West Coast, an IPA, or a pale ale. Those were pretty much mm-hmm. the choices. I would be like, oh, I already have a name. Oh, that's kind of intriguing. All right, I'm going to try that one. So again, like,
could be really a hit or miss though.
It was absolutely hit or miss because there was quite a few that I was like, nope, not for me. And again, we don't like to harp on Untappd because it is a tool there to help people. But again, because it's tied to the brewery's performance of, that's actually metrics that impact breweries. They look at that data and they'll say, well, you know, we're not rated that high on this beer. So they might discontinue a beer if, you know, it's constantly getting lower scores than their competitors, versus a lot of people think it's, oh, it's my personal, like, if I want to kind of journal my beer journey and share it with my friends, like, I was that person. And then I realized, oh, man, like, my 2.5 star killed this, you know, brewery's rating, that they had a 4 out of 5, and now they're a 3.5 out of 5. Man, like, I feel bad.
Yeah, it was all you, James. It's all you.
And that's why I don't give, like, giving numbers on beers. Yeah. But occasionally I'll still do it. But, you know, I have a set number that I don't go below. Even if I didn't like it, I'll respect the brewery enough and the craft brewers that made it to give it a score where I know, all right, that score, I wasn't a fan of it. Or I'll make a personal note, I wasn't a fan of it. But it was a solid beer for what it was.
Yeah, exactly. You can also keep your own personal little, doesn't have to be on Untappd. It could be somewhere else. You're sending notes on your phone or something.
You could bring your journal and you could write down as you're reading your book, right, Shannon?
I'm sure on Etsy you could find something that's a beer log. There is. Okay, so some of the things that we did not really touch on last time we talked about this is just keeping in mind basically if you're going to a brewery and you want to try, you know, you're going to want to try multiple different beers.
Oh, you're gonna. Okay. Especially now, like, whew, they got bands and they got crazy events.
You'll be there for a while. So
you're going to be there a while, get a sitter, get an Uber, You'll be there for a while.
Yeah. So just keep in mind the order in which you're getting different types of beer. So if you start with a really strong, bitter IPA, your taste buds are going to be like, see ya, peace out. And the rest of the beer that you taste after that, you might not get as many of the undertones or the notes or the flavors that you should be getting. So it's really recommended that you start out with a light, crisp beer. So maybe like a Pilsner or a Kolsch, something like that, and then move on to your IPAs. And then the stouts, like the heavier beers. So that goes for if you're getting full pours, which more power to you, but also if you're getting that flight. So if you're getting the flight and you're getting multiple styles of beer, make sure you're drinking that flight from lightest to darkest. And that will give you the best idea of what those beers taste like without killing your taste buds.
Yeah. And if you know you're not going to get a Pilsner or a Kolsch or a light lager, I tend to gravitate towards the nice maltier, like a red ale or, you know, the ambers, something like that, that mm-hmm. you really want to taste and experience the really great malts and the specialty malts they have in those beers. And again, you're typically going to be at a lower ABV or alcohol by volume percentage than you are if you start off with an IPA or mm-hmm. a double IPA or a triple IPA or even the Belgian styles, which are typically, you know, the triples get up there and percentage. So again, I also think alcohol percentage is mm-hmm. a big part too, because you don't want to start off with a 14% beer.
Oh God, who has a 14% beer?
Well, Shannon.
Do you?
Well,
no, you don't.
No, I think some of the Belgian triples are like 13 or 14%, so that they're out there. The Imperial Stouts, I don't really get the barrel aged ones that often, but.
Mm-hmm. I just, those they're far and few between, I feel like.
Those will be up there.
But yeah, okay, thanks for that.
I mean, but I'm just saying, like, you have to factor that in too.
No,
so you
definitely
have to factor in the ABV. And again, like, if you're going for, if it's a hot day, like, the weather, I think, plays a huge role too in the seasons. And I think that's something that I kind of overlooked when we first did this, of picking your pint.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, you can get some great deals on some breweries that kind of, trying to get rid of the last couple kegs of their winter mm-hmm. rotation, and they're just starting to do spring or spring to summer. And especially if you like those beers, like, that's the time to just relish it if you're trying to save a couple dollars, but also still enjoy something you like. But yeah, I think that's a great point of, if you're not going to stick with IPAs the whole time, don't shock your, you know,
taste buds.
Don't get that bitterness.
They will leave the building. The other thing that I was thinking about, if you're more versed in beer, I guess, is also just to keep in mind that you can branch out. You don't have to stick to the one style. You can get other things. So just maybe do a little adventure, choose your own adventure sometimes.
And to the homebrewers out there, I would say my best tip of advice in what I've grown over those last 5 years is going to the craft breweries and not just drinking what you know you like, but styles you might want to try to brew yourself. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best experiences to try and get your palate to a point where you can have that kind of palate knowledge, I would say, or tribal knowledge for when you're actually brewing of, this tastes interesting. What malt did they use in this? Or what hop combination did they use for this style? Or, ooh, I really like their Belgian triple. Like, let me look in how they did that. But, you know, like, it really opens your eyes into, all right, well, I'm not going to just brew IPAs all the time. I want to branch out and I want to brew other things. The best way of learning is to experience. Mm-hmm. And again, we have so many tools at our disposal now, from free recipes online versus like having to go into a store and find a handwritten recipe. I mean, it's evolved so much where I'd say like anybody could be a home brewer if you like beer.
But even at the craft breweries, I remember 5 years ago when you looked at a menu, they didn't have, it was basically just written on the wall or on a like computer or something like that. There wasn't a lot of printed menus or like places they could elaborate on how the beer was compiled. So if you're going back to your home brewing point, if you're trying to brew a different style, or you are having a beer that has a different flavor that you would like to replicate, then look at that menu and see, you know, what kind of malt is it? Like, there's those tools out there now that I feel like were not as prominent before. So, James, anything to add about how to pick a pint that we either didn't cover today or didn't cover 5 years ago?
I mean, the fact of the matter is there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's just, mm-hmm. if you want to make the most out of your trip to a brewery,
bang for your buck.
Well, bang for your buck is not really the way I would go about it now, because
no, I'm not
really
talking about actual money, okay, James. I'm just right, talking about
not the literal sense. Okay. All right.
Like,
well,
get the most out of your trip. It's just a figure of speech.
Okay. Well, geez, Shannon. 5 years, I've learned nothing.
Nope.
Get the cheapest beer, babe.
No.
$2 beers.
That sounds disgusting.
Those don't exist.
No.
But again, you never know where inspiration's gonna hit. And again, we went to that craft brewery in Pennsylvania where their menu had all those smash beers on it. Mm-hmm. And we're like, what's a smash beer? And then we're like, oh, wait, it's, you know, this. It's when you use the same hops and use the same base malts to make a beer. Or, oh, the Splatch. Remember the Splatch mm-hmm. brewery? And we're like, oh, what is that? Oh, Party Guile. Yeah. Oh, wait, we can make two beers out of the same grains? Like, that's incredible. Like, let's
learned
look into
lot.
That. We learned a lot just from, without even talking to the brewer or the mm-hmm. founder, they had that vision to have their establishment have those kind of things where it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah. So I also wanted, and this is something we kind of touched on the last time we did this episode, and I thought it was still helpful to have in here because hopefully we have some listeners out there who are getting into homebrewing or getting into the beer scene. And if we don't have them now, hopefully in the future we will. And I just wanted to give a little brief overview of the different types of beer. And I know you homebrewers out there are probably like, oh my God, this is like so rudimentary, like get out of here.
And they're like, oh my God, didn't you cover this over like multiple episodes where we focused on different ingredients?
We did, but I just wanted to give for some of those novice people out there like I was 5 years ago, I'm not going to go into a lot of specifics. I'm literally just going to do quick hits like IPA. What are some of the notes or flavors that you can expect from that? So if they're going to get a beer
okay.
at a craft brewery, they could kind of have maybe jot some notes down before they go and say, oh, stouts, mostly coffee and chocolate notes. I like those things. Then you can have it for a reference.
Okay.
So not going to go into depth. Just going to
okay,
not
and,
rattle.
And like, don't be like biased based on the color of the beer, because usually the darker beers are the lower ABV beers.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like coffee. The darker the roast, the less caffeine. But anyways. Okay. So basically two different types of beer styles, ales and lagers. Those are like the foundational roots of beer. So for the
foundation of beer.
James trying to do his own sound effects.
Sorry, haven't evolved that much.
So obviously you've got your IPAs, which are India pale ales. So mostly bitter, could be some citrus notes, milkshake style with lactose. I feel like IPAs are, and again, I'm not going to go into a lot, but I feel like IPAs are really diverse and they have mostly bitter, but just the hops that are in IPAs can really bring out different flavor profiles. So I feel like IPAs could be kind of one of those like mysterious entities that have a lot of different varieties.
It's the range is incredible now. And then even double IPA, mm-hmm. or if you see in the menu, DIPA.
Yeah. Or New England or West Coast. There's a lot of different varieties. So I feel like if you are looking to get into the IPA scene,
yeah, so
if I don't
want to
bore you
on
all.
The menu, there's East Coast and West Coast. Mm-hmm. So typically they'll designate West Coast if it's going to be a West Coast, because mm-hmm. that'll be more bitter. It's going to be a drier IPA typically. Clarity on that's really nice. I really like a West Coast IPA.
James is going to go get one.
No. West Coast IPA. Send me to those West Coast IPAs. But again, I never see on a menu that it says like East Coast IPA. It'll just say IPA.
Yeah, or New England IPA.
Or New England. Yeah. So New England IPA now, expect hazy.
Yeah.
It's going to be probably a little cloudier. You're going to get that lactose in there, or milkshake IPA. Mm-hmm. So that's another like descriptor that you'll see out there, that it's going to be a little bit fluffy. It's going to have that mouthfeel that's a little thicker.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Sorry, am I encroaching on your...
No, I just... You just love IPAs. You can't help yourself.
Citrus, floral... Piney, dank, one of Shannon's favorite words,
stop.
Dank.
I'll get on with my list, but I also just wanted to say, again, because we didn't want to go into a lot of detail, I just wanted to give some quick hits, but also going back to the IPAs, if you are going to want to get into IPAs, I would really recommend doing a little bit of research about the hop profiles. So like looking at what different types of hops there and what flavors they will bring out in a beer, because I think that will really help if you see something on the menu, you know, Cascade or Chinook, like you'll be able to kind of maybe have a little bit of, oh, that has this flavor profile, I might not like it as much. So that's all I'm going to say right now about hops and IPA. Maybe we could do a deeper dive at some point on that. But okay, so you got pale ales, which are biscuit malt flavors. Then you've got your stouts, which I said are chocolate coffee mostly. Then you've got your sours, raise up the roof. It's exactly what it sounds like.
And not
like.
All sours are created equal. There is such a wide range of sours.
Yeah, that one's very versatile too, because it could be fruited. It could be a very basic sour. Like, there's a lot of different varieties. It could be
an enamel kettle sour. Biter.
Yeah, it could be enamel biter, enamel ripper, whatever. But it's based, the sours, it's very descriptive. It's exactly what it sounds like. Wheat beers, so there's like your Hefs, your Dunks, your wit beers, citrus forward, grain heavy. And then you also have your goes, which I was going to circle back to the beginning of this episode. I don't know why he gave me a lager when a goes is an ale. What the heck, dude?
Yeah, that poor guy.
And basically it goes as wheat flavor, but it's brewed with salt. And that's what gives it kind of like that unique taste that you get from a goes. And then, as I said, we have lagers. So lagers are, I feel like, what people who are just getting into the beer scene really think about, because it's the Pilsners, the Hells, the Mexican lager. So, I mean, in big beer terms, Corona, Bud Light.
Oh, yeah.
All of those beers that you are seeing people, you know, buy in 30 packs. And so Pilsner's easy drinking, light body, heavy carbonation. Hells are more malt forward with cracker notes. Your Mexican lagers usually have predominantly flaked corn taste to them. And you can put a little lime in there. That's why it tastes so good.
And then those nice Vienna
and
lagers.
Vienna lagers, mostly toasted malt, some hop spice. And then lastly, your Kolsch, which are crisp and fruity.
I love a good Kolsch, especially in the summer. And I think I'm going to brew one this summer as well. Again, those lager styles that I've never really appreciated 5 years ago, it takes such a talent to brew those.
Well, it takes so much more time, I feel like, and patience, because you need, and you have to have the temperature control to do those. So
absolutely.
I feel like it's more complicated than we always make
IPAs,
it.
IPAs, you
talk about
throw
them.
Hops and you can hide a lot of the deficiencies that you have in your recipe. You can always throw lactose in it to kind of give it more mouthfeel. There's things you can do with an IPA that you cannot do with a solid Pilsner or a Kolsch of, you know, even purees. You can put fruited purees in some of those, but then you just, it's a blonde, becomes a blonde ale.
Yeah. It's just, So.
So it really does take a craft, and especially if you go over to Germany or some of those international nation, you know, like, they really have solid Kolsches and Pilsners and all these light beers that I can't wait to go to Germany and just experience. And even those like Dunkels and all those that Chen talked about, those lagers, they're just so good at lagering.
Yeah. And I mean, they've been doing it for
The monks,
hundreds of thousands of years over there. So, yeah. So I just thought I would give, like I said, a quick hit of all those different styles for those who may want to know. And obviously, James, we could not wrap up this episode without me giving you some St. Patty's history, because that's what we did in episode one.
River Shannon is not going to give us some.
The St. River Patrick's Shannon is unrelenting, okay? So in keeping with our very first episode, I want to share how, and this is super quick, how beer became so closely associated with the holiday. So basically, St. Patrick's Day tradition, it began as a feast to honor the death of St. Patrick. So it was on the anniversary of the day he died. And because St. Patrick's Day always falls during Lent, almost without fail, it was the one day that the church said, you know what, to heck with the Lenten traditions. You can go hog wild. So food and alcohol was able to be consumed on this day, which is why people were like, you know what? Sometimes we're at the very beginning of Lent. Sometimes we're halfway through. I got to make the most of this day. So heavy, excessive drinking was really prominent on that day. And that is why, or one of the reasons why, it was permanently linked to St. Patrick's Day. So that's a little fun facts for you in case on St. Patrick's Day you need something to share with your friends. Also, I'm going to say beware the Ides of March, which is tomorrow. Okay, well, I hope you all enjoyed that rewind. Be kind and rewind back to our episode one. And I wanted to say before we go, don't forget to check out our merch, because we have merch now. After 5 years old, we're allowed to have our own merch.
Yeah, 5 year olds are allowed to have merch. Yeah, absolutely.
So go to the link in our Instagram to access the site, and there you can find our podcast merch as well as our other items, such as our Brew Another Day initiative. And also, we're looking for homebrewers just like you to come on and share your story. So send us a direct message on Instagram if you're interested.
And I haven't evolved that much in 5 years. So if you really do like our show, share it with a friend. If you're trying to get your friends into beer or brewing or craft beer and what experiences they can experience, then send them on over to our Instagram, follow us, and make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms, because that's how the kids are doing it today. And that's how we find many of you great homebrewers out there. And thanks again for all of you who have been with us from the beginning. And 5 years have gone by so fast. And, you know, they're like, here's James again going on a rant.
And I'll just say that our Instagram is at Double Hot Beat Podcast.
And if you want to support our Brew Another Day initiative, check that out on our link tree on our Instagram, talking about community outreach and doing good for the community. Your support of that initiative would really mean the world to us. And we're planning on expanding the Brew Another Day initiative for other great causes. So stay tuned as well.
Yeah. And this has been Double Hot Beat. Catch you on the brew side. Thank you.